If you haven't been to my sessions and have no idea who I am, my name is Sami Laiho. I'm from Finland. Teach Windows operating systems, internal security. Done a few sessions already, and I got one at the same time tomorrow on Windows 10 internals. I teach around the world, travel about 200 days a year, and I've been doing this for exactly 20 years now. It's a bit more than half of my life. If this will work, I always start by teaching something from my own language. So I was actually wondering about my daughter was watching a cartoon from the called Frozen from Disney, and I saw these different translations on the TV, and I couldn't stop laughing because the English words change all the time, but the Finnish subtitles stay the same. So these are all from the actual movie. Go for it, let it burn, Anna is returning, Anna is burning, give me some of that peace, and everything is the same. In Finnish, it's Anna pala. You can pronounce it in a bit different ways. Next thing I have here is, as I always try to do, a little bit of both language teaching, but also some cultural things. In Finland, we have a really strict rule of personal space. Many people ask me why so many Finnish people drink coffee, but they don't understand the obvious reason why we drink most coffee in the world. A lot more than you US people, for example, which is weird, but we do. People ask me, why do you drink so much coffee? It's just self-protection. Because you and many other people like to hug. People come and hug Finnish people, but as long as we have the coffee mug, it keeps a safe distance for shaking hands. So keep the coffee mug in front of you and shake hands. Don't hug. Of course, nothing of this applies to sauna. Then you can sit on everyone's lap if you want, but outside of sauna, it has to be with these rules. I was took a picture from a bus stop in Finland. It's a bus stop in the biggest snowstorm that we had this year. Think about it, you only have a small covered space that you can hide below to keep yourself out of the snowstorm. What do Finnish people do? Oh, sorry. Everyone stands 1 meter apart. No one goes below that covered part. Everyone has to have their 1 meter of personal space, even in the dead, horrible snowstorm. Okay, I'm certified. Got a lot of certs. Had so many of them that I had to come up with an idea how to print it on a business card, so I actually weighed them. Got 2.6 pounds of certificates. No idea how much. Okay. Now, to the topic itself. I'm going to give out some swag. I got so much stuff here on the stage, which means that there's going to be a speaker after me who needs this space as fast as possible. I want to give the swag to you, but the problem is that when you come and get it, there's also going to be another line here for asking questions. So what I'll promise is I'm going to try to get my gear off here, give you your swag if you want it. If you have questions, I'll be out there. But just please, let me take my hardware first out of there and get the hell out of here. Because I know it from very personal experience, that the most annoying thing is that if you have a 30-minute change and the next speaker needs to wait because the previous one happens to be someone who gets a lot of questions. So trust me, I'm not running away. I'm going to stay here for tomorrow and Friday. So no worries. I'll be here. Okay? So we've had different sorts of stuff. Started 4 years ago with T-shirts. That word is the Finnish word for administrator in Windows user interface. That's how we log on. It's a good thing that we don't need any passwords because no one's going to get in anyway. So our language works like a super barrier. I've been sitting 2 days in the speaker room and I'm enjoying myself. Because everyone from US is like, I have to speak quiet because there's so many people here. when they're calling home, and I can just like alkaa puhua suomea ihan niin paljon kuin haluaa, eikä kukaan ymmärrä sanaakaan. Paitsi täällä on itse asiassa aika paljon suomalaisia, jotka ymmärtää, mutta moni ei. Finnish is also known as voice over IPsec. Then we had lids, and we had beanies, and now we have bumper stickers. Something for every year. Make sure you can get your laptop Finnish certified, okay? So what are we going to go through? We're going to go through something that I do quite a lot in my life, which is penetration testing. I'm not a black hat penetration tester, meaning that you would call me and I'd stay in a closet somewhere and try to hack your environment remotely or try to get into your environment that much. I'm more of a Windows, I'd say security auditor would be better. So I usually do this, what are known as gray box approaches, where I get a limited user account on a machine that's owned by the company. I use that device to get as far as I can, but I'm already inside of the walls of the company. I've hacked myself into quite a lot of Windows environments, so I also mainly focus on Windows. There are a lot of these tools that can be used to kind of like hit you with 2,000 different sorts of examples of exploits, and maybe something will work. But usually none of those work if you have the fundamentals correct. If you understand how operating system works, if you understand how security system works in Windows, none of those should really work. There are exceptions that will work, and we'll see a few of them. But anyway, I'll try to focus on more of a like a sophisticated method of showing my customers what's wrong in their environment, rather than just like bang, 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 and then laughing like, ha, I got in. So I don't really like that. I think I have an example here about a few things I try to concentrate on. First of all, always when you think about how your environment breaks, you have to first think how the human mind works. Where are people lazy? It's the best approach. When you know how they are usually lazy, then you can figure out what they'll skip, what they won't do by instructions, and usually find a weakness to get in. If something requires reading, that's a really good start. It's quite a lot of cases. I'll show you one perfect example, which has gotten me into probably more than 10 different environments during the past summer, which would have only required reading one web page on Microsoft's website. People don't read, don't like reading, okay. I'll credit this picture to a friend of mine, Douglas DeCamp, who actually sent it to me on Facebook. I love that reset button with the RTFM sign there. Totally appropriate for this one. The other thing that works is things that people don't use. You have no idea how much I hear this. I will ask people, like, what's your take on IPv6? We don't use it. Okay. You know that there's a huge fault in EFS, encrypting file system. There's a really big fault which was fixed in Windows 7 and Server 2008 R2. If you want to get a tip from me today, go to your own environments and check if your EFS recovery agent certificate has expired. If your Active Directory domain controller that you have in your domain was built with Server 2008 R2, then that will be valid for the next 100 years. But if you have your first domain controller in that domain being anything before 2008 R2, that means that that certificate has expired 3 years after your Active Directory was installed. I haven't met many companies that would not have it already invalid, so that's very common to see it. And when I tell people this, they're always like, well, that's not a problem because we don't use EFS. But I haven't seen a single environment that they would have had a group policy that would enforce that you cannot use EFS. They will tell me they don't use EFS. No one uses EFS. That's actually what they say. But is that an enforced setting, or is that just your interpretation of how your environment is like? Because things which are believed by admins of not being used are the best ones to find a weakness in. That EFS is, by the way, really nice to fix. certificates are meant to be renewed, so you just renew the certificate. Well, it's very easy, because to renew the certificate, you need the private key, and the private key is on your first ever domain controller C drive. So just go and get your first DCU ever built and just get it from there. Haven't met many that had saved it. Okay? So, gathering information. First, I'll need to gather information on what's happening in the environment. I don't really do this hack myself into a building thing. So physical security is not that much my piece of cake. I'm quite sure many of you know Paula very well. Paula Januszkiewicz, she'll have a few great sessions at the end of the week. But you can probably guess that there are certain differences why Paula can get into a bank and I can't. It's don't get me wrong, but these are Western culture things. If I walk into a bank, I'm a man. I'm the one who's supposed to open the door. But if Paula walks into a bank, someone will open the door, because that's being polite. That's what we men do. We open doors. Okay? So there are differences. That's why I don't really that much concentrate on that. I'll fix the environments of my customers' Windows environments. I'll fix their AD and fix their security. I don't really do that much. Arto is somewhere here. Arto, raise your hand. That's Arto. I will show you at him, point at him, because you have to know that he's real. Because I don't want to get him in trouble, and I'll promise to help him if he does. But physical security is sometimes quite ridiculous. How many of you remember coming to this conference and you had an instruction saying that you require to have a government-issued photo ID? Check how Arto got in. Where's the picture? Come on. I skipped one. Sorry, my bad. Where is Arto's picture? Oh, my God. That's the first demo effect, which has nothing to do with hardware. Where did I put it? I'll show it to you from the other screen then, which has it. Now we have 6 on. Okay, that's the one. Let me fix that. That's luckily easy to fix. That's what happens when they make us use these presentation machines. So. Must be here. Come on. Where's Arto? Here we go. Thanks, Microsoft, for physical security. I think that's a convenient government-issued photo ID. I did take your MCP ID at least off. Okay? Fair enough. I apparently forgot at what place it was at. Okay? Now we'll see which one. That one. Okay? I always try to play nice to my customers. So the first demo I'm going to show you is a reporting tool that I always send my customers beforehand so that we can at least get some of the biggest faults out of the environment, okay? So that it won't be like totally open doors when I get in, but just help them out a bit beforehand, all right? Why was this saying demo gods? That's saying demo gods because there's a thing which I have to remember to do before I start the demos. How many of you have seen a failed demo during this week? Wow. Really? Like everyone. Awesome. You know what they missed? You're always supposed to sacrifice a nano virtual machine to the demo gods. Here you go. Maybe I haven't been doing this that long, so they don't know, but that's mandatory. Here we have a Windows 8.1. which has BitLocker. And let's pretend this is a company computer, okay? So there's a BitLocker. You can see the C drive is now encrypted. There's the normal protectors of a password protector and a numerical password for the recovery key, okay? What I'm going to do is see if 8.1 has any weaknesses in it itself, okay? So what I'll send them first is actually PowerShell. So I'll send them a PowerShell script, which is, so I'm not even trying to take credit that I would have created a super cool reporting services. I've just packaged it into an executable so that it'll just use PowerShell. Thanks for, yeah. It'll take a while. I know it will take a while, so that's why I had to put it in. It runs about 10 different PowerShell scripts and tries to gather information mainly on services. So that's the first thing I always concentrate on. It should actually show a grid view. So I'm a bit worried. I was kind of hoping for a grid view. Not just, oh, here we go. Okay? So for example, this computer has a service which is called dummy service. That service is run with a user account called demo/admin. Now if you have services that are running with user accounts, that is your biggest fault. I know you have to have them in certain places, but if I would start to penetrate a company, that would be the first thing I would be looking at. Just to figure out if we have services that are using a user account to log on. Why? Because those passwords are dead easy to steal. That's only a matter of 2 seconds of getting passwords from service accounts. So that's the first place and the most obvious place. That's why I want them to do this first, so that at least like super simple stuff is somewhat already taken care of. So we have a, and when it shuts down, okay. So there's actually a service on this one, which I created just for this, so it's not a real service. But that would be the first and most important thing. So this dummy service is running with a logon user account like this. Now that's the first thing. How do you fix it? I don't like doing presentations where I'm just trying to scare the pants off people. I want to do sessions where you actually also tell them how to fix things. So how do you fix it? Two ways. First of all, local services now have a SID. Every single service that you install, have installed or install since Windows Vista has had a SID. Anything in Windows Security that has a SID becomes a security principle, which means it can be given or allowed or denied permissions or privileges. That means that you can easily just use a local service and give it the required permissions instead of using an admin account or things like that. There was a thing called managed service accounts, which was already better than normal user accounts because it was managed by Active Directory, changing passwords and stuff like that. But if you want to get rid of two problems, one, updating those passwords, two, being hacked by reading those passwords, you actually need to change to use group managed accounts. It's a bit different. It might sound the same and sometimes people miss and they don't even realize that there's a new thing called group managed. Managed service accounts and group managed service accounts. So you have to look at group managed service accounts, okay? Scouting the network. Oh, here's where Arto would have been in. You know, I talked about weaknesses being in someone not reading something. I should have read my own slides. It's also something I should have done. Just remembered it was in a different place. What I start always might sound quite simple, but first things I do if I get on an environment is I'll first need to get on the wireless or physical LAN. Do you have an authenticated environment? Well, if I have a machine that's already an approved machine, then I'm of course able to communicate to the network. If I don't, what I usually rely on is either hacking wireless, because even how sad it is still very poorly secured everywhere. If that doesn't work, then we'll start to figure out what kind of authentication is used by the switches. But those are very good if you have them, or IPsec. Those will keep me out. But when I have access to the network and I want to know what's there, because they don't tell me up front that what they have in the network, things I do first, one is always PXE boot. Why? PXE booting because off. Let's see it here in action. So we got a domain controller running here. It also is running a PXE service. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to just take a Windows 8.1 machine that we just had here, and I'm going to reboot this. Oh, sorry. Good. Thank you. Here we go. The Windows 8.1 machine. And let's just go and reboot this box. Or actually, I think we even have another one. Get a Windows 10 one. Let's take a brand new one that's I don't think anyone wants to be on Windows 8 anymore, so we can take this one at the same time. It's probably up and running, so what we will do is we will reboot it. Yes. So we'll just restart. And we can actually cheat a bit. And let's stop it. Turn off, okay? Go here, file, settings, let's see what's our network adapter looking like. Move it up there. And let's boot this from the network. Now the first thing that's used is the PXE service. Why do we do this? Because when you attach to the PXE server, this is all I need. The server IP, 172.16.0.200, okay? That's it for that box, thank you. And then we have another machine here. And the problem is the default settings of MDT, which usually sadly means SCCM as well. So let's do this. 172.16.0.200. Oops. And deep. Deployment share. The bad thing is that by default, this is readable by authenticated users, not just admins. So we're starting very simple. Trust me, we're getting a lot more technical and a lot more nerdy later on. So if you go to control, check out your custom settings INI, and look for your domain admin password, for example. Might sound silly, but it is. This is purely my, based on my work. I've listed these in the order of which works most, okay? This is one of the most common ones. Everyone uses MDT, and they forget that the shares are hidden by default, but they are open, okay? So make sure that's not there. You have pretty good tools that you can use to. Wow. You do luckily have quite good tools that you can use to just scout around your network. So SysInternals has two tools, ShareEnum and AccessEnum, which both can scout through the network and find weak shares. Okay? So use those. Of course, authenticating switches are awesome, but then you usually authenticate at the corner of your network, and after that you get inside of your network, as IPsec is around every host. So I like IPsec if I can choose. IPv6, no one uses it. It's quite true. Quite many people will tell me no one uses it. But have you given it any thought? That's the problem. If I go to any environment, the most common situation is that, yes, they're not using it. The problem is that the IT guys haven't taken it into their meetings to discuss what they should be doing with it. Especially, of course, that they're not monitoring it at all. So one of the first things we do to gather network information is to take IPv6, okay? So we can check that out. At some point, I'm going to learn which computer is which number. That's the correct one. Let's try this. We got a Windows 8.1 machine here, which has quite normal IP configuration of link local, IPv6 address, and that's all. Now, what I will do is I'm going to open up another machine. That's my Canon, for many sorts of reasons. Let's open this up, and what I'm going to do is take benefit of the fact that we got a dual stack approach, that we have two IPv versions, IPv4 and IPv6. Because I don't want to trigger any alarms, and I don't want my customer to realize that I'm actually trying to spy on them. So what we'll do is a simple thing, IPv6 enable. I'll show you what this is. That's only two lines of code, two netsh commands. Setting IPv6 advertising on and effectively making this an IPv6 router with a advertised network, which in IPv6 is meant to replace DHCP. Okay? So if we turn that on, oops, sorry, that won't do. Can't do anything because that's not running elevated. Control shift click. Come on. Why doesn't that? Oh, here we go. Let's try that again. Shift, hold on, now we have plenty of them. So let's do this. Shift, right click, copy as path, paste. While that's running, I can go here, change this to a bigger font so you can see it. And if we'll go and look for ipconfig now, you can see that I actually have an IPv6 network configured. Now, of course, the good thing about this is that this is a workgroup machine, so it has nothing to do with the computers that I have here as my domain computers. It's just a separate workgroup computer that happens to be on the same physical network. So now if I'll go for any other one of these computers that we have here, which are actually domain joined, start looking at ipconfig, I can actually play around quite long, routing all traffic into that box that I just created. Because two things. One, that IPv6 address is now their default gateway. And the other fact being that Windows Vista prefers IPv6. Which means that if it has IPv6, it'll always prefer it over IPv4. Now, the great thing, of course, is that everything seems to run normal. Their IDE works, file shares work. So now it doesn't really trigger any alarms because everything seems to work exactly like it did before. But I'm just gathering information on IPv6 behind the scenes all the time. So I'd hope that you'd not just in the future say that you don't use IPv6. I'd still hope you would take some sort of a stand on the matter and take it into consideration on how you will deal with this, okay? I'm going to test this. No, it doesn't work. I was going to do a cool sound effect, but I can't get it working. So let's get back to the number 8. Yes. So make sure you can monitor IPv6 and have your next meeting with your IT guys. Discuss how do we take this into consideration, okay? Whitelisting, one of the most important ones. People hate AppLocker. I don't know why, I love it. It's the best thing ever happened to Windows. People hated software restriction policies even more, which was the XP one, the first one. If you look at AppLocker and you see where the policy settings go in the registry, they actually go below a key called SRPV2. software restriction policy version 2, but it had such a bad reputation that Microsoft changed the name to AppLocker so that people wouldn't think about the old one that didn't work. AppLocker doesn't work if you have admin rights. Like I've said on previous sessions, you can't do it. So why don't people like AppLocker? Most commonly, someone calls me. We want to deploy AppLocker, but the problem is that we got like 4,000 lines of rules because we got so many applications. Trust me, I have an environment running 30,000 machines with over 1,000 applications. It's been running since 2002 with software restriction policies and AppLocker, and it has 14 rules. So it's totally doable. The problem is that people are whitelisting items, and quite often they have to because they have admin rights. So my take on this is use containers. Let's take a very, very simple example, okay? So I'm going to change to the demo machine, as I'm not sure if I can draw on that. Oops, another one. Here we go. So I will actually, let's take, we can just take Notepad, that's fine. So if this is your C drive, which means that's done by you, that's the image you created and you make sure that's secure, okay? I'm going to do a rule on AppLocker, which is super simple. I'm going to take away admin rights. I'm not running admin rights on this box. If I'll try to run CMD with elevated access, it's going to ask me for, well, actually for my middle finger, but anyway. So it's going to ask me for elevated privileges. So I'm not an admin. And I have AppLocker here. So what we'll do now is I will actually show you my AppLocker rule. My AppLocker rule is even simpler than anything you've seen before. This is not the one that I would use in an enterprise. This is like my hobby machine. So my AppLocker only has 4 rules. So let's go here. Application control policies. AppLocker, executable rules, 4 rules. First of all, I have the default rules, which are quite good. Think about this. You have your C drive. You've taken care of the security. That C drive has what folders? It has users, Windows, let's say program files, maybe x86 as well, and one hidden program data. Okay? Now, what I will do is I will say that you can run applications as a normal user from here and here. And you don't have admin rights. That's actually very simple, and it's very effective. But we're talking about containers, not listing executables. If someone starts listing executables with AppLocker, it'll take a few months and someone says, oh, it didn't work, let's give up. I had a customer, a city that had 8,000 lines when we started. So I know what the worst case is. But now there are weaknesses into this, so we have to do something more, okay? First of all, let me see, what's mine? I have the default rules, and then I have one rule on top of those default rules. I will allow anything that's signed. That would be an AppLocker rule I would put in place on any computer that I have. Not on my customers, because I need them to be more secure because I can't trust the user, but I will not do it on my own machine. This is mine. Why? Because 99% of malware is unsigned. There's 300,000 new malware pieces every day, so I kill 99% of those with a single rule. That's my personal AppLocker. I'm not recommending it as your enterprise AppLocker. That's my personal one, but I think that should be the level that anyone would have. So if I will run, I think I have something that would be not signed, and show you some of my projects. Because I don't know how to develop software, I'm using Auto IT. Here's an unsigned executable, which I know is unsigned. Can't be run because it's unsigned. Now, this one is not sadly bulletproof, so what you have to do is, and what I will do every time I attack an environment that has AppLocker, is this one. Access check for write permissions for normal users on C Windows. Sadly, Microsoft did a minor fault. There are two subfolders below Windows which actually allow limited users to write into it. So those you have to add as exceptions. Because otherwise they will just put anything there and it'll run. Then you have to do the same, of course, for program files. This is just horrible. I know the guys are going to hate me when I show this, but maybe they will fix it faster. Program files, fine. None of the subfolders, at least on the first level, have permissions for a limited user to write into it, so they can't put stuff in it. What about the other one? Oh. Have you heard about a phone called Huawei? I don't know how you spell it. That's how Finnish people spell it, Huawei. Okay? So, they made a 4G modem, which comes with an application called Mobile Partner. You install Mobile Partner to get 4G connections. The bad thing about Mobile Partner was that it actually changes that folder for everyone full control and destroys the whole security of Windows. But minor fault. So, you can use AppLocker, you can use it safely, and it's a great tool, but it does require you to take certain measures. So what I would recommend for everyone would absolutely be to just, I'm losing my clicker all the time. Use AppLocker, some other sort of whitelisting, but use access check and incorporate access check into the process where you certify applications into your environment. If you can't use AppLocker because you don't have enterprise license or education license of Windows 10, use SRP. It works on pro as well. Software restriction policies, works on professional. It's not as cool and hip as AppLocker, but it's still one of the most effective, proactive measures you can have. And one thing there is that AppLocker has a weakness in, which is that if you have AppLocker, if you want to keep it secure currently, you have to put in a firewall rule which prevents rundll32.executable.exe from contacting outside of the box. That's on the slide. Next. Should be. Somewhere. Here. Block rundll32.exe from communicating out to the network. That's what you need to do as well. So, AppLocker has weaknesses, but they are totally preventable from being abused. Take it. It's your best tool in Windows currently. If you get AppLocker, there are two things now. Think about me. If I'm running a limited user and I have AppLocker, then there's two things I need to do. I have to get what's known as the payload in, so I need to get an executable inside. In some cases, for example, if there's a proxy server that filters what you can download from the internet, then I first have to get stuff into the machine, and then I have to get them past AppLocker. So those are usually two steps that I need to do. Now I only just ran something. I told you where to put it if you have it, but we still didn't think about or talk about how to get that stuff in. I have these small machines with me, these small Intel NUCs. I always carry them with me because I use them and I change them to use the same IP address as the company's default gateway, and then just usually through that move the payloads in if possible. If that's not possible, if they've taken measures against that, then we have to somehow start getting admin rights, and that's what we're going to look at. There are a few really big issues. First one is SMB relay. That's been there for years. It's a very common thing. I have two demos that I have videos of, just because of you will see me hack BitLocker, and that'll, I think demo gods would need a few more nano servers to be able to do all of these demos live. So a few of them I do have as videos. So I'm going to show you SMB relay from these machines that I recorded earlier, so just that I'm sure that it works. Because it'll work if I'm doing an attack, because I can try it many times, but when I'm doing a demo here and it needs to be recorded, then usually, as you know, it might not. What's SMB Relay? The concept itself is quite easy. You are trying to connect to a third-party server. I will poison your ARP cache and your ARP connections and take that connection to me, catch your SMB communications, and relay it to someone else. So it's a man-in-the-middle attack. Easily done with a tool called Interceptor. Highly trustable. I don't know if these machines will even let me surf there. Let's try Edge. I think it's Sniff. Oh, wrong screen, sorry. At some point. Oh yeah, that's it, of course. Which one is this way? Sniff.su, Interceptor. One of the most commonly used sniffers that can do man-in-the-middle attacks. I can show it to you in action as well, but if you need the address, it's there. So, let's go one step more, here we go. That's an SMB relay, let's do this first. I sure hope we can see something from it. From the right-hand side, you can see a tool called Interceptor that I just mentioned. What Interceptor does is it poisons the traffic so that it captures what's happening on these two machines. This Windows 7 machine is pretending to be our server, and this Windows 10 machine is the one that we're going to capture SMB communications from and then relay it to someone else. So what we're effectively trying to do is an SMB relay attack where we need to put stuff on this Windows 7 box without having admin rights and being able to put them in the Windows folder, which is protected against limited users, okay? So we can just fast forward a bit. That's an admin account, which doesn't play any role. So now we're going to use a normal limited user. This limited user here is going to log on. And his Windows machine currently has nothing new. See, so there's something 15th of September, but nothing after that. So what happens after this is, on this other machine here next to it, this Windows 10 machine, we will connect to this machine, but our interceptor will actually intercept that communication, take the SMB, and send that SMB again to our victim, in this case, that Windows 7 box. So this computer here connects a normal UNC connection to demo 7.1, which is the computer below here. And this one captures the SMB traffic, which means that if you look at the Windows 7 box now, that Windows 7 box actually has a new file. It's called SMRS. So by capturing the SMB traffic, we can inject files into that Windows folder without admin rights. So SMB relay is usually a thing that works very, very well. So that's one of the first ones that we always use as well. If you want to block it, we have to talk about that one as well. So SMB signing. Here we go. Sometimes it's not that effective because you might capture someone's SMB traffic who is a normal user. So I have to capture admin to be able to become admin, okay? This one stopped working. Go here. Luckily, yes. Now we go. Get rid of NTLM. Go Kerberos. There's a really good article on Microsoft's website on how to go Kerberos only, okay? So that's one of your next steps to do. Try to get rid of NTLM. You can't do it totally, but you can do usually a hell of a better job than it's currently, because normally it's used a lot. So try to get rid of that. Now, we're getting into something really, really, really scary. How do we get past BitLocker? Three ways. Ordered, most to least likely. Easiest is social engineering. Is there anyone here who's been on my BitLocker session in TechEd? Few. Nice. I had a lot of fun. I came to US and I had to go. I was in Atlanta actually then, and I was traveling from Atlanta to I think Houston, and I had to go to Lowe's, a hardware store, and buy a 15-inch wrench because we use it as a universal decryption key. So I had a guy in the audience, and he had a PIN code protected BitLocker, and I was trying to prove that you don't need a PIN code. TPM protected BitLocker is just fine if you know how to configure everything else in your security. I don't use PIN codes on any machines ever. I only use TPM protected BitLocker. And I was trying to prove my point. So what we did was he got his PIN code and I gave my Surface RT with only TPM. I gave it to another attendee and said, you try to start hacking that Surface RT with no PIN code. You try to start hacking that, and I'll try to get that guy's PIN code. And then the other guy started, like, trying to get into RT, and I went and ran to my backpack and took the 15-inch wrench and just jumped off the, like, I'm going to kill you if you don't give the PIN code to me. So I got it. That's the Finnish way of hacking BitLocker. Bit blunt, but worked very well, okay? DMA attacks are quite common, and I'll show you one, and Princeton attack is the one where you freeze the memory. That's the nerdiest way of getting into BitLocker, and it's really hard to do on machines that have soldered memory, but very dense memory, so least likely to be used. What do we need? These are my normal equipments that I carry with me. The middle one is something I love. It's actually a USB 3 dock for SATA disks, but it also can do cloning without software. So you just hit that button two times and it clones the disks. So that's what I use a lot. Then on the left side, you have a USB 3 SATA reader and you have a separate SATA adapter for M.2 and M.SATA disks. Because with these, I'm usually okay. These are the ones that I find in machines. And then there's the cold spray. If the customer really wants to see a cold boot attack, why not? Honestly, it's never used against you, but some people are just like, can you do it? Can you do it? So show off. Software is needed. We need two things for DMA attacks. We need a tool that we can use to create an image of your disk, and then we need a tool to capture your RAM. So I use Passware and Xways. Xways is an imaging tool, and Passware is a DMA hacking tool, okay? Hacks a lot of other passwords as well. Now, let's see what we have here. Oh my God. I have no idea what happened to my webcam. Honestly, I have no idea what happened. The only way I could show, to get any picture, what was with Camtasia. I got 15 minutes here before I tried to fix it. I couldn't find what's using it, so I'll have to do troubleshooting in the speaker room after this. But what I'm going to show you is this because I know it works. Okay? That is a small picture, but it's a picture still. What do we have here is, let's start by this one. That's our victim. Can you guess why I had some trouble getting through TSA? So that's an Intel NUC, and it has an external Kingston hard disk, and it has an external FireWire cable here. So that's a FireWire cable. And then I have another NUC, which is used as the one that's going to capture the memory. It's attached with FireWire. I have a lot of different sorts of tools, which look really scary, especially on an X-ray. I think that's about it. That's about what I'm going to use. And I have an HDMI capturing card that I can use. So what we'll do now is, first of all, the victim is a normal Windows 10 box. And now I want you to pay attention. This is Windows 10, 1607. I don't know about you, but I'm pissed. Not only about the food, there's another reason. Oh, it wasn't just me. So, if I ask Microsoft, what about Thunderbolt 3? Dell XPS 13 was the one I had. My wife has an Asus ZenBook. Quite a lot of those have Thunderbolt 3. Now, the problem with my customers is that their docking stations are Thunderbolt 3 docking stations, which means they can't disable Thunderbolt 3 anymore, like they did before. What does Microsoft say? No problem. No problem, because Windows 10, it's not a problem anymore. Because Windows 10 doesn't allow unknown DMA devices if the computer's locked or no one's locked on. I beg to differ. So let's see. Windows 10 box we got here is, What we have here is an HDMI capturing card pointed to that Intel NUC. It's rebooted from a USB key, which has Passware Firewire memory imager. What I'm going to do now is see if I attached my keyboard. I apparently did. Let's hit next. Can I overwrite previous memory image? Yes, please. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to attach a FireWire cable into the victim computer here, okay? Plug that in. Now, what Microsoft says is that Windows 10 will not accept these connections. And it's a brand new machine, not a, like, I haven't used it for anything else except trying to demo this, so let's see what happens. It should only take around 30 seconds, but in a situation like this, it feels like forever. And after that, it'll take around maybe 7 minutes to capture. So what we're gonna do is we are actually going to let it capture memory, do other stuff between, and then we will go forward. That next, which just went blue, is something that by Microsoft sales shouldn't happen. Okay? Let's hit next. And here we go. RAM read through DMA on a Windows 10 box 1607. So, I think it's not exactly true what they said. I actually have the I can fix it too. I'll fix it as well. So I tell you why and how it's fixed as well, if they don't come and throw me out before that. So let's get back here. And as you saw briefly, the Windows box has no idea what's happening, so DMA is just behind the curtains doing things. So I've already done something beforehand, which is that I actually took the disk out of that machine and imaged the disk. Because imaging that disk takes about like 20 minutes, and I honestly don't have time to do it. So just that you don't go home thinking that you have no idea how it was done, this is something I didn't show you. So I used the disk imager to take a disk image out of that small, tiny mSATA disk on that NUC. So that's what I've done, and I'm not going to show it to you because it takes too much time. And then we're going to use that memory image to steal the BitLocker key from that memory and access that disk image. Hopefully. Now, while that's doing that, we have to do something else. And this is the coolest thing. This is just so crazy, and it works everywhere. How do we gain admin access? Because at some point, my customers do get so good that what happens is that they've done everything I've taught them. And they're like laughing almost next to me, like, ha ha ha, we know you're gonna try that. No, won't work. And the biggest problem, of course, being that what if they don't run admin rights anywhere and they have BitLocker? I need admin rights. How do I gain admin rights? relying on the fact that people don't read the security bulletins. Okay, so user network-based weakness. Who are the only ones who read security bulletins? I do. I hope you do. But certainly all the hackers do. One of the best examples is this one that's listed here. It's a critical fix from last year. And I think every one of my customers has patched this. I don't know if I've met anyone who hasn't patched this. So everyone has patched it. Now the only problem is that to be protected from the vulnerability described in this bulletin, additional configuration by a system administrator is required. So any sort of monitoring software will show you that you're unpatched and people will patch it instantly. But no one reads those freaking bulletins. And that's one of the examples. It gives you full access without full network blown privilege escalation on like 99% of my customers. Because they all patched it and none of them read it. I hope some of you did, at least. So in addition to this, that you install the patch, you have to manually change registry settings. Because you have to tell what UNC paths your domain controllers use, they can't patch it for you. So I always go through every single security bulletin, and it's horrible. But for me, it's my tool. That's how I get into environments, knowing that people don't read this stuff, okay? So what does it look like in real world? How do we actually then get past it? It's a group policy attack. So how do we get in? Here we are. That's still reading memory. And I'm going to play you another clip. There are different sorts of tools that can be used for trying to bypass and get into companies. This one is called Core Impact. If you buy their products after this, tell them I told you, because the only reason why they let me do it and use it for free is that I show it somewhere. I would love to have the money to do it, but it costs probably like 3,000 euros per month. So it's a hell of an expensive tool. But it is the Ferrari of exploit kits. So it is expensive, I'll tell you, but it is awesome. So luckily they let me use it because I told them that I would use a free one like Interceptor, but the problem is that the demo works maybe once out of five times, and I can't risk that during here, okay? So that's why I told them that I'll use that one because I know it works all the time, and then just they let me use it, okay? So I'm sadly not always able to use it for my work. So what we do is actually quite many different sorts of attacks. So first of all, we do an SMB relay attack. And what we do is we hijack group policy. So we take a Windows 7 box on the left-hand side here. That Windows 7 box will reboot. And it's going to ask for group policy. We trust on that it will ask for group policy. Now when it starts asking for group policy, we will capture that traffic, pretend to be your domain controller, and send you a totally BS group policy object, which will actually use taskhost.exe, which has system rights, to give me full root access to the system with BitLocker without any admin rights. So that this one works basically every time, everywhere I've done it. That's again a bit sluggish. So now it's starting to, I can do this again. So now what it's starting to do is reading group policies, okay? So we capture that traffic coming from that computer and we will feed it with a false group policy. And that false group policy will actually try to do a registry change through taskhost.exe. It calls for gpt.ini, reads the group policy version number, and gives a newer version back so that we know that it's going to hack the box. That shouldn't take too long. And now, if we look at the box, there's actually a nice skull just to show you that it was hacked, but the more important one is here. Just take a shell, Who am I? Game over. So, SMB Relay and group policy, those work. Sadly for me and my business is, of course, that I shouldn't be here talking to you, because now you go home and fix it and I don't have an exploit anymore. That's the bad thing about this. Let's try to stay on the white hat side. So, gaining admin access. Now, how do we fix it? RTFM. Sorry, guys. Only way. Read the security bulletins. There are at least two announced in 2015 which require manual labor. Can't just install the fixes, you have to change registry keys. There's two different hotfixes. Okay, so let's see. Where are we? How is our DMA attack going? It's 72%. So it's still taking a while. Now we can, what we can do is feed it to the next one. Let me change the computer again. I'll show you the next tool. Oops, passware. That requires admin rights. Give it the finger. Here we go. Remind me later, okay. So, recover a full disk encryption, BitLocker. You have to give it the actual disk that was used. So that's the disk image that I already created earlier. It has partitions, so pick up your C partition, partition 3. And then it requires a memory image. Now the memory image is still capturing. So that'll take maybe a bit too long, which means I'm gonna take, as you can probably guess, I have a spare one, because I wasn't sure what I have time to do. So let's let that start doing it. It's exactly the same image, because that's going to take 8 minutes and it'll be just done before we finish, I hope. So now, what's the problem here? The actual problem is Thunderbolt 3, as I said, because that's so cool. Usually using a USB-C connector, and it's on most of the new computers. Luckily, my wife has one. I don't. Don't tell her. But this device here is just a cheap one from StarTech, so it's just the Thunderbolt 3 to FireWire adapter, which you'll need. Plug that into Thunderbolt 3 and hope that that Thunderbolt 3 manufacturer is one of those wise ones. So for example, my wife's Asus will ask that. Are you sure you want to allow it? So honestly, my wife's Asus is secure. Now why am I telling you about this and why I want to talk about it is the fact that this is just up to the device manufacturer. Windows can't protect against it. So when you choose devices that you can test first, that those docking stations or devices that you use require some sort of pairing so that you actually can make them secure. But Windows can't. So it is up to the manufacturer. That's my wife's computer. And you can see there that it's already reading the memory. But I did cheat because I enabled that device. So I wanted to show you that Thunderbolt 3 does support this. But of course it's nice that in this case it was secure. But keep it in mind that you have to test it. Windows can't, okay? So what can you do with Windows 10? This is the weirdest thing. Now what you need to do is go to the expo area and there's a security booth. Go there and find the guys and ask them. Because I've asked them and I gave them 2 weeks time to tell me how to fix this. But they don't know how to use it. The problem is that we can do what they promised, which is to block unknown DMA ports before someone logs on or unlocks the machine. So you can do it, but the only way is to do it with an MDM policy. There's no group policy, no registry settings, have to have MDM. It's the only way you can do it. And there's no documentation on how to do it, of course. But I'm lucky enough to try so long, so many times that I got it working, so I can tell you it works, but it is just crazy that it's only an MDM policy. So you would have to have Intune. It can't be done with the provision package, for example, which is usually a great way of getting MDM stuff into machines if you don't have an MDM, but it's not, you can't do it on a provision package either. It's just MDM. So no DMA or Blockit. There are those are the links for it, because you will have to do it still, I'd say. Always use Secure Boot and TPM. If you want to do security like a boss, then you of course use use PIN codes or USB keys, prevent your standby modes, stuff like that, to make it even more secure. But 99% of people I know will be just fine with plain TPM protection, no PIN codes. For the future, buy computers that have IOMMU, because we hope that Microsoft will move this BitLocker data onto what's known as secure kernel. And then IOMMU will help you. It's an input-output manager for devices. So IO device memory management unit. It's titled as VTD on Intel or AMD VI from AMD. So you need to look for those acronyms if you want to have one. Princeton attack. If you honestly want to see a Princeton attack, I would just go ahead. There's a YouTube link. That's the original one, I mean, the guys from Princeton who are the guys who this is named after. So Princeton attack is the one where you take the memory, freeze it with a cold spray, take it to your Linux laboratory, put it in a memory reader and steal the keys. I don't know what your common thieves are like here. In Finland we have this guy, we named him Crutcher, as one of my old colleagues here who was working for the same company, but this guy broke into a office in Helsinki, which Heikki probably knows very well. So the guy broke in and he stole two laptops and one projector. And then he left the office. And our security officer called one of our employees who was like on alert at that time and called her and said that you had a break-in. But no worries, we caught the guy because he was using crutches. So we call him the Crutcher. He's a superhero in Finland, the only thief in the country. So honestly, if that's what you're fighting against, think about Princeton attack. Cold spray, steal the memory, go to your Linux laboratory with your crutches. I dare to say that's not that common to happen, okay? So, I did some elevation of access demos on the previous session. I'm not going to show them here. If you want to see my session, it was titled, "Why do you need to learn why you need to ditch admin rights from this morning." It has a lot of examples on how to elevate access after you gained access as an admin. Getting local admin is the first step, then you can go domain admin if you want, or if you can. But that's something that you can check from that, because I didn't even do a demo on it. Just so remember that that is the next step. How do we prevent it? Make sure no one has local admin. Randomize your local admin passwords. Use Labs, Adminizer. It's my own tool, shameless plug, I know. Don't allow domain admins to log on outside of domain controllers. Silo in your permissions. This is what your environment should look like. At three levels. There's power on top, which is your domain controllers. That's the only place where domain admins can log on. Then you have your data layer, which has your servers, maybe have server applications, and that's the place where your server admins can log on, but domain admins can't. And then you have your access layer, which is your users and workstations. Definitely no domain admin can log on onto these. So make sure your group policies prevent them from logging on. Hacking BitLocker. Okay. Let's see what's happening on the other machine. 2 minutes. And we got four. Quite good timing, I'd say. It'll take still a while. So what we can do while that is going is... actually, we'll keep it there and think about how BitLocker actually gets hacked. Okay? So, most commonly, what I do is... I used to have a golden retriever. His name was Samson. It was my dear own dog. And deceased like 15 years ago, so a long time ago. But anyway, Samson was the most beautiful golden retriever in the Nordic countries 3 years in a row, which means he has the needed cuteness for social engineering. So, 2014, cutest puppy BitLocker. Maybe it wouldn't say BitLocker if I send it to someone. This is honestly what I use when I get into companies more than any of that DMA stuff that you saw. So Microsoft tried to make my life a lot harder because I wanted to create a PowerPoint that would hack BitLocker. And they're up to their game. So what happened was that if you go and pet this dog, it will actually just run a hyperlink. PowerPoint is the best ever penetration tool in the history of Microsoft. So now the problem is that that if I run a command, let's go browse, and I actually want to do it so that I will make this puppy here, make him manage BitLocker, okay? So I would go here, C, Windows, System 32, and we'll just find manage. We'll just find, there's no manage PDE. That's actually weird, because it is there. PowerPoint is now running in a mode which prevents me to get access to these most dangerous tools since 2013. So Microsoft is up to their game. I can't get to manage PDE. And I already, oh. I'm gonna run out of battery. That's nice. It's a good tip. 17 minutes, come on. I planned on this. So they're up to their game, I can't do it. You know what happened? It was a bit bad because I thought that I was, I promised one company that I would do a demo on how to hack BitLocker with PowerPoint. Because I thought I would do this. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it's tomorrow morning, I have to do the BitLocker hacking stuff, so let's go here and manage Bit... Oh no. Luckily I remembered something from the good old days of Windows XP. If you're an administrator in your company, this is not a true story, I'm just making this up. If an administrator in your company would not allow you to play MP3s on Winamp, what would you do? You would schedule to play Winamp. Because scheduler uses Mrs. System, and Mrs. System doesn't obey policies, so you would just schedule to run music, okay? So I remembered that. So how this one actually works is it creates a logon task that changes the recovery password to be plain zeros, and then just schedules it to run on next logon. So next time when he starts the computer, the password will be plain zeros. But now he must be stupid because he's not gonna run PowerPoint. Think about the CSO guy. He's the guy who speaks to me in the first place, and he goes like, I am not gonna run that PowerPoint from Mr. Laiho. I have seen this demo before. No way, I will not do it. Well, the good thing is that I don't really care. Why? Because in the latest case when I was working, this was the CSO's own personal computer. it's already zeros. Why? Because he ran my service checker. That was like so funny. It's the Mr. CSO himself, like, oh yes, I'll do this and I'll do this. And then he's like, he was so happy. He was like, we have managed to block Mr. Laiho from getting anywhere. So good job, guys. And then I was, one thing. What? Can I try to hack your BitLocker? Go ahead. Zeros and in. Okay, he lost his face and was really pissed at me first, but then he asked for forgiveness and... Okay, so honestly, don't run my reporting tools. That's just stupid. And while that was happening, you can see that we have a hacked DMA access as well. So here's your key, and it also saves the key as a key file on your temporary folder. So that was done as well. Which means that I am kind of like almost done, I think. Want to learn more? I got a plural site training, my own video-based training, a free newsletter, blog, follow me on Twitter. Benjamin Franklin once said something very wise, which has had nothing to do with security, but it's totally related to security. He said that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So please go proactive security, all right? Thanks, guys.